Thanks to everyone for coming out this Sunday morning. If you're listening to these talks from a remote location, you're welcome to correspond with us at utahchristianas@gmail.com. We also have a membership class at our website at www.utahchristianas.org. And you're welcome to take that and get back to us. We'd like to thank those who have become members, because without your support, we couldn't do what we do. Things are inspired by the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Start out with something a little funny. There were three ministers in a boat, and one of the ministers suggested that they share information about their shortcomings, because after all, they were amongst their peers, and it's not like they can share these things with their congregational members. So one minister said, "I'll start." He said, "I have a problem with gambling." He says, "About once a month, I take $100 from the collection plate, and I go to Nevada, and I gamble. And I struggle with this for years." So the next minister, he piped up, and he said, "I have a problem with cheating. I have to confess to you two guys that I don't always pay my taxes." Came to the third minister, and he wouldn't say anything. And they prompted him, "Come on, we confess. What is it that you struggle with?" Finally, he said, "Well, if you insist, I will confide in you that I struggle with gossip, and I can't wait to get off of this boat." Our topic today is Lord in the Heart, which might be subtitled, God Remembers You. It's easy to feel forgotten. It's easy to feel that people don't care about you, that we're insignificant, that our hopes and dreams don't really matter. We go through seasons when we're not seeing any progress in our life. No new doors are opening. No breaks are coming our way. We experience the same old, day in, day out. We get up, we go to work, we come home, we go to sleep, we get up, we go to work, we come home, we go to sleep, we earn money, we do something on the weekends. It's easy to get discouraged and to think that we're not moving forward in our lives. We can lose our enthusiasm and start dragging through life thinking that nobody's interested, things are never going to change. We might have been praying about a situation for years. Nothing's changed. I heard about a woman that was abused when she was young, and abused to such a point that she could not even bring herself to look people into the eye. So many years had passed with her being burdened by that past. Sometimes we've prayed about a problem, a sickness, a legal problem, a promotion, a coworker that's backbiting us, and we don't seem to get the answer. It seems like God's out to lunch or God's on vacation. We've had seasons when it seems like everybody around us is getting the breaks, but they're not coming our way. We're being left out. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the example is given of being in a well in the middle of the forest. Sometimes if you're walking in the forest and if you fall into a covered well, you can cry out for as long as you like at the top of your lungs, and it's going to be useless. The place is isolated, uninhabited. There's no one to hear you. We can feel that way sometimes, even amidst family members and relatives. We might be smiling up top, but down below, our stomach is churning with anxiety, acids. We feel claustrophobic, overwhelmed, feel like we're going down for the third time, even sometimes when we're surrounded by people, but the intimacy isn't there. Even in the midst of others, we can feel lost and insignificant and alone and forgotten. Krishna reassures us in the Bhagavad Gita, "Sarvasya chaham ridi shanivishto matash mitir ganam." There's someone who will never forget you. And it's not just that God doesn't forget you, it is that He always remembers you at every moment. And someone says, "Well, how is that possible? One God, millions and millions of living entities. How is it that He can be completely and intimately knowledgeable about what's happening with each and every living entity at every second?" That's the nature of God. That's what it means to be omnipotent. Example is that you have the sun in the sky. The sun is one unique entity in a localized place. And yet if you put 100 pots in the soccer field behind here with water in it, the reflection of the sun will appear in each and every pot. Similarly, God is one, but He's expanded Himself in the innumerable different expansions so that he is within the heart of each and every living being. And he knows us better than we know ourselves. Before you know to turn right, he already knows you're going to turn right. Before you've made the decision to turn left, he already knows you're going to turn left. Just like a flower can be known by its fragrance, even if you're blindfolded, by the fragrance you can tell this is a rose, this is a gardenia, this is jasmine. So the Lord is situated in the heart alongside the living entity, and he knows our consciousness. He knows what we're going to do before we even know. He knows us better than we know ourselves. And he has that same intimate connection with each and every living being. In all the various species of life, in all the millions and millions of universes that he's created, he knows the most intimate day-to-day, moment-to-moment details about each and every one of you. He knows what Anu's feeling right now as she's sitting there. He knows what Ramesh is feeling right now as he's sitting there. He knows the pains in place. Someone's too warm, they're wondering, should I take off my coat? Someone's a little cold, should I put my coat on? He knows all that, day-to-day, moment-to-moment. Each one of us is a tiny part of God. We're compared to a particle of sunshine. Infinitesimal. Qualitatively, we're equal to God. God is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. We are also eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. But he's infinite, and we're infinitesimal. But he accompanies us within the heart. That tiny, infinitesimal soul is never abandoned by the Lord. The Lord accompanies the individual soul as the supreme soul in the heart of the living being. It's like as if you're a particle of sunshine and you have the sun right with you. And the sun will never leave you. It will never abandon you. Doesn't mean that God approves of everything we do. But it means that he'll never cut us loose. He'll always accompany us no matter where we're going. We may have made bad choices. We may be going to an abominable place as a result of the bad choices and the sins that we've committed, but there's never a point the Lord says, you're on your own, I cut you loose. There's never a point where he stops trying to do good to us. Heard a story once about a man in the concentration camps, Solomon Rosenberg. People would be sent out, this was in Nazi Germany in World War II, and the Jews were interred. So the rule in the concentration camp was very simple. As long as you could work, you would be allowed to live. But when you're no longer able to do your work, they would escort you out during the day to the gas chambers. So every day when Solomon would come back from his work, he would look to check and make sure the members of his family were still there in the dormitory where they were all lived. He had his mother, his father, both of whom were elderly. He has his eldest son, Joshua, his youngest son, David, and he had his wife also. And every day at the end of the work, he would come back and he would anxiously look for their faces in the crowd. And sure enough, one day he came back and his elderly mother and father, their faces were no longer there. He thought the next one would be David. His youngest son had always had a frail constitution and he was afraid that David would be the next. Yes, one day he came back, he looked, he no longer saw the face of his youngest son, David. He found his oldest son in a corner crying his eyes out. And he said, yes, Dad, they took David away. Solomon said, where's your mom? David was scared. He didn't want to go alone. So his mom told him, don't worry, David. I will come with you. I will accompany you. So great was her love that although she personally would not choose to go to the gas chambers, she still elected to accompany her youngest son out of parental love, protection, and affection to go to the gas chambers with him. Krishna has that same parental affection for each and every one of us. Due to our bad decisions, who knows what low species, what low levels we've sunk to in previous incarnations. Maybe we've been llamas and pigs and snakes and bacteria. Who knows what our past incarnations have been based on heinous, wrong choices. But there was never a point when the Lord wasn't willing to accompany us. And he's always hoping that we'll turn to him and we'll seek his advice and direction so that we may go back home, back to Godhead. The Lord remembers us at each and every moment. It is said he has us carved in the palm of his hand. See, like a tattoo, have you ever seen these big biker guys with sleeveless vests and they've got a girl's name tattooed on their bicep? Funny thing is, often they marry someone who has a different name. So then they have to figure out how to get rid of that tattoo, or at least counteract it by a tattoo on another arm. This is my wife and this was my girlfriend. We're tattooed on God's impression. We're tattooed on God's consciousness. He follows us like an obsessed lover. He doesn't interfere with our free will, our independence. He wants us of our own free will to choose to turn back to him, to love him, and to be reunited with him in the spiritual world. Now, why should God care so much about us? We're rebellious, we're disobedient, we left the spiritual world of our own free will. Why would God accompany us in this world of birth and death as we revolve repeatedly on the cycle of samsara? And the answer is that he created each and every one of us uniquely and individually. And so, although there are gazillion living beings in the spiritual world with whom he has deep, intimate, loving relationships, and he can satisfy each and every one of them, just like he divides himself and he enters into the heart of each and every living being in this conditioned state, he also can appear in innumerable ways and forms in the spiritual world so that each liberated soul feels like God is with me only. God is with my circle of friends only. God is with my family only. Considering all this, why does God take so much trouble to try to witness and oversee and ultimately advise and guide and direct our activities so that we may be reclaimed back home, back to God? And the answer is that he created each and every one of us unique. There's a flavor of love which you can enjoy and which the Lord looks forward to enjoying with you and you only. It's not exactly the same with any other living being. No one living being can substitute in the eternal loving affairs of the Lord with another. So although he's satisfied and absorbed and engaged in many, many, many countless loving affairs, there's something still there that he misses you. 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 And he hankers after reclaiming you, bringing you back into his loving entourage in the eternal spiritual world. And the Brihad Bhagavatamrita describes Gopakumar. After who knows how many incarnations, he finally appears in his original siddhasroop, his spiritual body, in the spiritual world, just at the end of the day, when all the inhabitants of Vrindavan are waiting for Krishna to return from the pasturing grounds with his friends and his cows after a day of transcendental pastimes. And everybody's looking off in the distance, and there's a dust cloud is the first thing they see. The dust is raised by the hooves and by the cowherd boys. But if you look carefully, you'll see emerging from that dust cloud is the peacock feather on the top of Krishna's head. And some even go to the top of the buildings to get a better vantage point. Now Krishna, as he comes back at the end of the day, he looks at the assembly, at the welcome party, to see if there isn't any new souls there that have just escaped from the world of birth and death to reunite him, to rejoin him in the spiritual world. And on this particular narration by Sanatana Goswami, when Krishna sees Gopakumar, who has just appeared there, Krishna runs to him, embraces him, hugs him, and God himself faints. He faints because he missed that unique individual, that unique personality. And he was exalted, overjoyed to be able to rejoin in those eternal loving pastimes with Gopakumar to the point that God fainted away out of jubilation and satisfaction. God has not forgotten you. Even now, when you're thinking, why hasn't it happened? It's been so long, and you're about to write off your dreams. Even as you're despairing, God is working on your behalf. That everything will come in its due season. Right now, he's arranging the right people to cross your path. Right now, he's arranging the right breaks, the right opportunities, And in just the right time, in due season, you're going to see that dream fulfilled. After all, God put the dream in your heart, and He's not going to let it languish. Many people may forget about you. People may do you wrong. People may betray you. People may leave you when you need them the most. When we contemplated acquiring this Salt Lake City property, it was a big commitment. $1.2 million, $750,000 loan. But the bigger commitment was who's going to man it. We didn't have a lot of people in Spanish Fork, and we had a couple there that had been staying with us for some time. So I said, I will only go forward and make this commitment, this financial commitment, as long as you assure me that you'll stay with us as residents, either in Spanish Fork so that we can come up here, or up here so that we can maintain Spanish Fork. So I won't make this commitment unless you assure me, unless you make a commitment on your part, that you will be amongst those we can count on to run this center. And I asked three times. I asked three times. And each time I was assured, we will, you can count on us. We're here. We're not going anywhere. 2 weeks after we signed the paper, said we're going back to Hawaii. So this is the material world. It's a broken world. It's broken people. We shouldn't be surprised when this happens. But the interesting thing was, as God closed that door, He opened another door. Shyam and Rasher came. When they left, Shyam and Rasher came. So the dream that we had to open a Salt Lake City center was still kept alive. God did not forget about that. He did not leave us hanging in the wind. He did not leave us out on the end of the rope. we go through, whatever trials or tribulations, whatever unfair things happen to us, Krishna hasn't forgotten about that, and He will make it up to us. Those of you who are parents, you've sacrificed years and years of your life to raise your children. You've put your own dreams aside. You've put them on the shelf. Sometimes you wonder whether you'll ever revive them, whether they're dead in the water, or whether there's any possibility that they'll be rekindled. And sometimes you even forget those dreams. So long has it been since you've seen any progress that you forget it. But God didn't forget it, because He created you to fulfill the very dream that He put in your heart. So sometimes after a season of 10 or 15 or even 20 years, you're able to take up where you left off and continue marching towards your dreams. Neither has He forgot about the years that you spent sacrificing for your children also. We hear about Harishchandra. In ancient times, Harishchandra was a great devotee of Lord Krishna. He had a kingdom, he had a beautiful wife, he had a young son. He incurred the enmity and envy of a sage named Vishwamitra. And Vishwamitra heard about, everyone was praising Harishchandra, what a great devotee he was. And Vishwamitra said, he's just a devotee because he gets kingdom, beautiful wife, son. If you were to take all those things away, I'll bet you he wouldn't stay in faith. He's just in faith because of all the good things he gets. So Vishwamitra was given the nod to put Harishchandra through fire. He took his kingdom away. He took his wife and child away, and they were sold into slavery. Harishchandra eked out a living working the crematorium, and he had two functions. One is he would burn bodies of dead people. There was a little fee. The proprietor of the crematorium arranged that whatever fee was given, Harishchandra would get half, and then half would go to the proprietor. And that was how he earned his living. One day, after not having seen his wife and son for some time, the wife came with the dead body of their young infant son in her arms. He had expired due to a snake bite. But she had not the money to perform the cremation. He would have waived his part of the fee, Harishchandra, but he had to get the money for the owner. So she left the body and she went out to see if she couldn't find a little money. She saw a gold item, some or other, lying on the path. She picked it up, and no longer did she, apparently it was a part of something that had been stolen, and the sheriff was looking for the thieves, and no sooner had she picked it up, and they said, she must have been amongst the thieves, and they tried her, they took her to court, and they tried her, and they condemned her to die for thievery. Harishchandra was not only the person that burned the bodies, but he was also the executioner. And that's how he supported himself. So in all of this, When he lost his kingdom, he did not renounce his faith. When his wife and child were sold into slavery, he did not renounce his faith. When his little dead infant son was brought before him and there wasn't even enough money to cremate his body, he did not renounce his faith. And when he was faced with the task of executing his wife, even then he did not renounce his faith. He kept in faith, knowing that God can bring good out of bad. And in the end, having passed all those tests and stood fast in Krishna consciousness, he was vindicated. Vishwamitra gave up. His kingdom was restored double. He got the freedom of his wife, and his infant son was brought back from the dead. But Krishna may, out of love, put you through certain things and test your faith in a crucible of fire. But at one and the same time, he's saying, I will not forget what you have sacrificed for me, and I will make it up for you. I will give you double. We experience that in the life of Dronacharya as well. Dronacharya was living in the forest with his father, and into that forest hermitage one day comes a king and his son. The son's name was Draupada, and they had just been deposed. They went into exile in the forest, and they were there, and the two boys, Dronacharya and Draupada, became fast friends. And Draupada taught Dronacharya all the arts of warfare. And they had many adventures together, and they were so tied at the hip that Draupada used to promise his friend that if I ever get my kingdom back, I'll give you half. The day came, there was a coup. Draupada and his father went back to reclaim their kingdom, and Dronacharya waited in the forest. He missed his friend. He missed their adventures. And he waited for the newly anointed prince to send a messenger to bring Dronacharya there, where he would invite him to sit on the throne, and they would rule the kingdom benevolently to the benefit of the citizens. Dronacharya waited. Days went by. Weeks went by. Months went by. He received no word from his old friend Draupada. Then he decided, I'll go and see him. So when he arrived in the capital city and announced, I'm the old friend of Draupada, he wasn't given any special treatment. He had to wait in line with the average people for hours and hours and hours. And then he peered before Draupada and he said, do you remember me, your old friend? And you said so many times that you would give me half the kingdom. And I'm not really interested in the kingdom, but I was looking forward to the friendship. I was looking forward to us working as a team to rule the kingdom justly and make the citizens happy. And Draupada looked at him. He said, what are you talking about and who are you? You must be some sort of a charlatan, some sort of an imposter. He said, toss him out of the palace on his ear. I do not know this person. At that point, Dronacharya must have thought that God had forgotten about him. God had forgotten about his dream. But God had not forgotten. Many years later, Dronacharya was walking and there were some boys around a well, looking in a well. And the boys said, old man, can you help us out here? We dropped a very valuable ring in the well, and if our guardian finds out we lost this ring, we're going to be in hot water. You don't know any way of getting a ring out of the bottom of a well, do you? Dronacharya said, let me borrow a bow and an arrow. He tied a string to the arrow, and he shot an arrow down through the water. It went through the ring, and he pulled it back up and gave it to the boys. When the boys narrated this story to Dhritarashtra, Dhritarashtra summoned Dronacharya. He said, can you teach all these young boys, Arjuna, Duryodhana, Ashwatthama, can you teach them the military arts? And that old dream began to stir. That ember began to reignite. And Dronacharya said, I can do that. On one condition, that when they're trained, whatever I ask them to do, I'll ask them to do one thing. They must do without question what I ask. When the boys had reached a high level of proficiency and it was time for them to fulfill the boon of Dronacharya, he said, go and siege and attack the city of Draupada and bring him to me as a captain. That was done. And when Draupada appeared before Dronacharya, Dronacharya said, you know, you promised me half the kingdom. And you betrayed me. You did me wrong. But God did not forget that dream that was within my heart. And now, because of the trials and tribulations that you put me through, guess what? I don't have half the kingdom. I got double. I got the whole kingdom. And then he gave half back to his friend, hoping to mend fences and all. That didn't exactly happen, but it was all according to the plan of the Lord. I read about mother giraffes. When the baby giraffe takes its birth, the baby giraffe comes out of the womb of the mother, and because the giraffe is so tall, the baby drops about 10 foot, hits the earth, and that jump starts its lungs. And then, because of its long legs and its awkwardness, it takes the baby giraffe like a half an hour to stand. Falling, standing, wobbling like that. And if you were watching that, you'd be amazed. No sooner is the baby giraffe upright than the mother kicks him down again. What is all that about? Why would a mother kick a baby like that? And the baby giraffe took 30 minutes the first time. Then the next time it takes 29 minutes to stand upright. And the mother kicks him down. And then the next time it takes him 28 minutes. And the mother kicks him down. You say, what's going on here? What a cruel, heartless mother. But you'll notice each time the baby does it, the time is less. 27, 26, 25, 15, 14, 13, 10. And pretty much as a result of being repeatedly knocked down in rapid succession, within a very short time, with a matter of few hours, that baby giraffe knows how to jump up. It's got muscle tone. It's got fitness so that when a lion or a leopard comes to eat it, it can get out of the danger zone and save its life. Otherwise, on its own, it would take 2 or 3 days, and at any time, it would just be easy pickings for any sort of a predator. What am I saying? That the repeated knocking down on the part of the mother is for the good of the baby giraffe. So God sometimes will send us challenges. He'll send us opposition in order to make us fit to rejoin Him in the spiritual world. When God remembers, it doesn't just mean that He doesn't forget you. It means that He hasn't forgotten you. He hasn't forgotten the dreams. He hasn't forgotten the mission that you're meant to perform. He hasn't forgotten the purpose for which He created you. Just at the point when you think everything's lost, there's no hope, God will show up and He'll show out. Prabhupada came to America. He was 70 years old. He had no money. He didn't know people. He didn't even have a place to stay. So he was staying a few days here, a few days there, just living from hand to mouth, chanting a couple days a week on a bongo drum in the park. One day he was staying with a boy named David. David was a nice enough boy, but he went out one evening and took LSD and became crazed in his head. Came back, he got a knife out of the kitchen, and he was chasing Prabhupada in the apartment with a knife. Prabhupada left all of his belongings. He went down to the street, and he went to the apartment of one Michael Grant. Michael Grant had been coming to the chanting in the park. And Michael Grant took a collection amongst his friends and they rented the first temple of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It was a storefront on the Lower East Side of Manhattan called Matchless Gifts. And they rented an apartment for Srila Prabhupada across the courtyard on the second floor. And that is still rented by the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. There's still programs there. But that was the beginning. Just at the point when anyone else would have thought it was the end, that it couldn't get any worse, that the dream was dead, being chased around the apartment, a 71-year-old man by a crazed LSD, just at the point when you would have written it off and thought it was dead, but God didn't. It's not over till God says it's over. That was not the end. That was actually the beginning of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. When God remembers you, it doesn't matter how long it's been. It doesn't matter how impossible it looks. He's going to turn it around. If you've stayed in faith, if you've chanted, you've sown the seeds, it's just a matter of time before you reap the harvest. No point in going through life dragging down, being negative, defeated, feeling alone and forgotten. God hasn't forgotten you, and in due course of time, He will revive and fulfill those dreams. Let's get in the habit of getting up and thanking Him in advance for fulfilling our dreams. I heard a story about a man who had no particularly religious sentiments, didn't believe in God particularly, never went to church, but still God had a plan for this man, although he himself was unaware of it. What happened was one day he was walking out in the woods in his shirt sleeves. He got disoriented, he got lost, it started to snow. He realized he would not survive a night outside in his shirt sleeves. So he prayed to God, God, if you get me through this night, I will dedicate my life to you. This was a purpose which God was using these circumstances to revive. It was snowing, it was getting colder and colder. He was looking for a place to settle in. He saw a crevice amongst a couple of rocks. So he wedged himself in there and he felt himself getting more and more drowsy, which is a very bad sign. It means hypothermia setting in. So gradually he succumbed more and more and more to sleep, and he fully expected that once he went to sleep, he would never wake up again in the morning. He went to sleep, and the next impression upon him was the sun beating down on his face. He said, I survived the night. I don't know how that happened. And he looked beside him, and a shaggy dog had come from who knows where in the middle of the night, in the middle of the woods, and gotten into that crevice and kept him warm and cuddled with him. And that shaggy dog, he never saw it before, never saw it again. After that, he dedicated his life to spreading the word of the Lord and took up a ministry and benefited many, many people all over the world. When you're getting depressed and you're feeling like nobody cares, you're insignificant, your dreams are not going to come to fruition, take solace in these thoughts. What is it that you think God can't do? What is it that you think that the creator of millions and millions and millions of universes, what is it that you think he can't do? Do you have a family member or a relative that you think is too far gone? A co-worker, a neighbor who you think is too negative, too cynical, too much of a gossip, too much of a partier, too sarcastic? Have you written off these people? Has society written off these people? Well, I'm here today to tell you that God never writes off anyone. He remembers. And when he remembers, things are going to happen. Supernatural things are going to happen. During the time of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were no greater blackguards. There were no greater sinners in Jagai and Madai. There was not a crime they had not committed. They were intoxicated. They were murderers. They were thieves. They were robbers. They went to the point of throwing a pot at Nityananda and smashing his forehead and creating a gash. Lord Chaitanya came to that spot to chastise them. And as soon as they saw Lord Chaitanya, all their sins, all their black-heartedness dissipated and went a long distance away from them. They bowed down in the dust at Lord Chaitanya's feet. They had an immediate change of heart. They had an explosive gift of blessings, which in an instant thrust them to a whole higher level. And the very fact that they were so sinful before they had this change of heart, before they experienced the favor of the Lord, actually made them more effective in their ministry. Because the contrast between how sinful they'd been and how thorough a change of heart they'd had actually assisted in them fulfilling God's purpose for them to bring more and more and more people to the practice of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Like Jagai and Madai, you may be far away from where you'd like to be. You may be low, and you need to rise much, 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 much higher in your life. Well, get ready, because all it takes is one glance from God. All it takes is one blessing. All it takes is one favor, and he can explosively thrust you to a whole another level. No matter how deep or dark or inky or impenetrable the blackness may be, it only takes a beam of sunlight to illuminate and to dispel all of that darkness. When God remembers you, sickness can't stop what he has in mind. Disappointment can't stop what he has in mind. Other people stabbing you in the back or discouraging you or backbiting you can't stop what God has in mind. When he remembers you, he's going to lift you out of the pit, set you on a rock, and put a song in your heart. Arjuna thought he'd reached a dead end. He had to fight with his cousins, his relatives, his brothers, his teachers. He thought, it doesn't get any worse than this. He said, if I fight, I can't see any good outcome. If I don't fight, I can't see any good outcome. At that point, Krishna says to him, Bahu nime vyatitani janmani tavacharjana tani aham veda sarvam nittam veda parantapa. Krishna reminds Arjuna of what Arjuna has forgotten. Krishna says, you and I have taken many births. You have forgotten them, but I remember all of them. So I have, through many, many other previous births, built you up, trained you, and now we've come to this point. And it is part of my plan that I will make you even more fit to be a standard carrier of the kingdom of God. I have gotten you this far, so now you trust me that this is for your good, and I have a great plan, and you are a part of this plan. And if you go ahead and fight according to my instructions, you will become everything that I intended you to be. I heard a story once about a fellow named Ben Hooper. He lived in a little town in Baptist, Tennessee. His mother was a woman of loose morals. I've heard it said community chest. Nobody knew who his father was. She'd known so many men. He was the illegitimate son of the lady with the loosest morals in the town. And in a Baptist town, everybody stared at him with condemnation, with accusation. They made him feel insignificant. They made him feel guilty for the sins of his mother and for his fatherlessness. He went dragging about wherever he would go, wilting under the stares of the elders and the so-called pious and religious church people. He didn't do well in school. And every Sunday he had a habit that when the church services were being conducted, he would go in late, sit in the back, and as soon as the sermon was over, he'd shoot out the door so that he didn't have to encounter everybody and endure those condemnatory stares. One day, a new preacher had come into town as a guest speaker. And sure enough, he went in late, he sat in the back, and when the sermon was over, he tried to get out the door, but there was a bottleneck, and he was caught in the crowd, and his worst fears were realized. A hand clapped on his shoulder, and he looked around, and there was the preacher. And the preacher asked the last question in the world he wanted to hear: whose son are you? What family are you from? Who's your father? He was so embarrassed, he wanted to go into the woodwork. His face turned crimson, and then the preacher said, I know you. I know who your family is. I know who your father is. You're a son. You're a child of Almighty God. Now I see the family resemblance. He said, dust yourself off, throw your shoulders back, and go out and perform the mission and the purposes for which your Almighty Father put you here. And later, that boy became elected as the governor of Tennessee. Ben Hooper, one of the governors of Tennessee. I heard a story about a family that an owl, a baby owl, the winds had blown. Sometimes it happens. They're too weak, or they try to fly before their time, and the wind will blow them out of the tree, and they have to stay on the ground for a day or two till they get their strength back, until they can fly back up into the nest. So this owl had flown down into the front yard of a family. The kids were going to go and touch it and see whether they could give it food or water. But the father said, let's call the vet first and get the scoop on this before we do anything. And sure enough, the vet said, no, don't touch that baby owl, because somewhere up in the trees, the mother owl is looking after that baby owl. The mother owl is not taking her eyes off that baby owl for a moment. So if anyone approaches that baby owl, she'll come down and, if necessary, sacrifice her life with her talons and all. And they went back and they looked up, and sure enough, they saw these two saucer-like eyes up in the trees. And the mother was unblinkingly looking down at the baby. So similarly, when we have troubles, when time passes and our dreams do not seem like they're coming to fruition, when we're not making the progress that we'd like to make, the trick is to look up, Don't look down. Don't focus on your problems. Don't look at your feet. Don't look at the stumbling blocks. Don't look at the thorns. Look up at your loving, protecting Father who has never forgotten you, even for a moment, and whose big saucer-like Jagannath eyes, those eyes of love, those eyes of compassion, those eyes that are just waiting to vindicate you, waiting to rescue you, waiting to redeem you, waiting to protect you, waiting to defend you, are up there. I'd like you to have this confidence today that no matter where you are in life, no matter who or what comes against you, we're not alone. We're never forgotten. Krishna remembers us. He remembers the dreams that he himself has put on the inside of us. He remembers the promises that you're holding on to. He remembers the sacrifices that you've made. You are unforgettable to Krishna. And when he remembers you, supernatural things are going to happen. When he remembers you, dark clouds are going to give away. When he remembers you, barren wombs are going to conceive. When he remembers you, shaggy dogs are going to come out of nowhere to keep you warm. If you'll stir up your faith and believe that Krishna is watching over you, believe that nothing can keep you from your destiny. If you'll do that, then you're going to see Krishna show up and show out in your life in amazing ways. And if you're inclined, what happened there, to chant with me, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.